Hello and welcome to the Gab and Jules show. Gab is still not there. I'm Jules, obviously you know. Gab is still not there, he's still away on holiday. So we've got Don Hutchinson with us today. Thank you so much for coming all the way and be on the show. We will have Jan Agofjortov a bit later to talk about Kai Havertz and Thiago Alcantara and the latest news there. We will have the quick hits at the end, some interesting ones, but there's only one place to start, really, is Wembley, Don. On Saturday, the Community Shield Arsenal against Liverpool, Arsenal winning on penalties. Stuart Robson was saying on Thursday in the show that, okay, maybe for some people it's not really that important. It's a friendly, glorified friendly, if you want. Yeah. But he was saying that psychologically, you know, playing well and winning that we've seen in previous seasons, that could give you an edge for the season to start in a couple of weeks, for example. Is that how you see it?
I definitely, because I played in the Community Shield, which was the Charity Shield back in 1992, and we lost 4-3 against Leeds when Cantona scored a hat-trick.
Yes.
And I can remember being in the dressing room after the game, and we were absolutely gutted. We didn't treat that as a friendly.
Yeah.
We played the game like it was a proper game, a competitive game. It's always a chance, Jules, to put a marker down. If you're Liverpool, you want to put a marker down and beat Arsenal and sort of wipe them away, to subconsciously think that they're not going to be a threat for your position in the top four, even, you know, trying to close the gap. And then when you lose the game, even though it was on penalties, it will be a little bit of a blow. And I think for fans leaving, or I was going to say leaving the stadium, but leaving obviously, you know, wherever they're watching the game, I think for Liverpool fans, it's now clear that they're probably not going to defend the title quite as easy as they won it last season, unless they sign players. For Arsenal, I thought it was a massive game for them, a statement win for them. And inside of a month, they've walked away from Wembley with two trophies. So now you can see, if you're an Arsenal fan, you can be so optimistic where your side are not carrying any passengers whatsoever. When you think of Arsenal sides in the past, away from home traditionally against the top four,
you're right.
You'd be carrying Ozil, you might be carrying someone else. Now I see a manager in Mikel Arteta where he is not willing to take any rubbish from the players. If your attitude's not going to be good, Guendouzi, you won't be in the side. If you don't roll up your sleeves and work hard and be a team player, Mesut Ozil, you won't be in the side. So that can only be a good thing.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, there was a few big players missing for various reasons. So you could even see this as a B team almost. No offense to the players who played, but that's the case. But they were very good tactically, very astute, very disciplined again, hard to break down, especially after they took the lead.
Yep.
Great goal by Aubameyang on coming into on his right foot. We'll talk about Aubameyang a little bit later, but as we were discussing just before starting the show, you like what Arteta is doing. That's sort of the direction they're going to, the idea that he's bringing to the team.
You can see a plan. And the first goal was a sensational goal, all the way back from the goalkeeper playing out from the back.
A bit like the goal against City in the semi-final.
But don't underestimate how much hard work that is. And I was on social media at the weekend and people were saying about the, you know, I said it was a cracking performance by Arsenal. And lots of fans were saying, what do you mean by a cracking performance? We were very defensive. They were parking the bus, terms that people like to use. And I said, without being patronising, that takes so much hard work on the training ground. You don't just set the players up and say, right, goalkeeper, you've got the ball. Can you play it from the back? Mikel Arteta has to put these players in certain positions with the opposition putting a press on, even though it would be a training ground sort of practice. And then you score the perfect goal. It was amazing because what he's done, he's simplified the game for the Arsenal players that defensively, like David Luiz, who are not particularly sound. He plays three at the back. He's two wide players dropping deep when they haven't got the ball. Yeah. There's five. The two holding midfield players in Elneny and Granit Xhaka make seven. So when you've got seven players behind the ball, it's actually hard to break through and play between the lines. Then you think all the young players like Nketiah and Saka and Maitland-Niles, when they're going forward, they've got so much energy. And then you bring the genius of Aubameyang into it. So, as I said, you have to be optimistic if you're an Arsenal fan.
Aubameyang, I mean, he clearly loves being at Wembley with no fans, especially between the final, the semi-final, and the Community Shield. Great goal, as we said.
Yeah.
Playing on that left-hand side again, with Nketiah replacing Lacazette in the centre. It's right to give him that new deal, right? It's
100%.
You can't do without him in that kind of form.
I mean, I can't believe, Jules, we've been talking about this for months, but stroke over the last sort of 10 days, 2 weeks. Why isn't anyone at Arsenal got that contract right in front of him after he won the FA Cup? Sign that. After he won the Community Shield, sign that. Because why wouldn't you? But you say that, Jules. I mean, I firmly believe that he will sign. But while you sort of semi-run that risk of maybe Ronald Koeman or anyone else, you know, across Europe, desperate for that type of player, you are running the risk of leaving Aubameyang and his agents a chance to speak to other clubs. Why wouldn't you just get the deal done?
No,
wrap him up and get it signed.
You're right. And for Liverpool, You were disappointed, I think, like all of us, especially in the first half where there was no intensity. Had they won another shirt, you would not have recognised the team that we've seen in the last two seasons in the Premier League or in Europe. Is it just because they've worked hard at maybe during pre-season in Austria physically and maybe the legs were a bit heavy, do you think? Or
I think so.
Mentally, they need to refresh something a bit.
I think both. I think the one thing I took away from Liverpool since Project Restart, which I was obviously aware of before, but it sort of hit home more often, is that Liverpool, especially at Anfield, they play with so much emotion. You know, I've commentated on Liverpool thousands of times where they've been either losing 1-0 at half-time or drawing or even winning the game by one. And once they kick towards the cop end, you fancy them wave and wave after attack, they'll go and win the game quite comfortable. Without any fans in the stadium, they've lost that sort of that little bit of edge which Liverpool fans drive them on and make sure that then they kick on and finish strong. And the first 45 minutes, Jules, was so boring and so pedestrian and so predictable. And then Naby Keita come on, who changed the game, and Minamino got his goal. But I watched Mo Salah because I was watching the players inside the stadium, so you get a great vantage point. You can see the whole 22 players. And he didn't look interested for the first 45 minutes. So whether it's a mentality thing or a fitness thing, which they should be fit, you know, being in the training camp at Austria well before the Arsenal players, I thought they'd be too strong. I thought after the game, Timo Werner come to mind, and I thought, I wonder if Jurgen Klopp regrets not bringing him into the football club. But then after the game, surely now they've got to speed up the Thiago signing, because he's a player with his passing range. He doesn't play sideways. He can if he wants, but he can play those balls in behind very quickly. His range of pass is good. But I think they need something different.
I
think while Chelsea are strengthening, while Man United are strengthening, while Man City are strengthening, with maybe Messi coming in and Nathan Ake at the back, and Ferran Torres coming in, who's a fantastic player, they're signing players that you think they're going to kick on. So I think Liverpool just need that extra little bit and an extra spark.
I mean, it's obviously a good point about Timo Werner, the lack of signings, really. I mean, Minamino comes on and does quite well, scores his first goal, so maybe psychologically that would be a big boost for him, because he looked so good at Salzburg and you and I saw him play, and then I think coming in January, he had a bit of time to adapt and etc. But you also realise that without Trent at right back, and Nico Williams is a great young player, and there's no problem about that, but the whole team, the creativity is not the same, the intensity, the linker play between the two fullbacks is not there. And I think Trent was a big miss as well on Saturday.
Yeah, it's a trust issue, isn't it? When you're used to playing with particular players, and you see Trent at right back, if you're Mo Salah, if you're Mane, if you guys in midfield that know his the way he plays the game and how much he loves to whip balls across when he gets the byline and he switch a play over to Andy Robertson. It's all a trust thing. It's a muscle memory of knowing exactly what someone's going to do before they actually do it. So I think Nico Williams is going to be a fantastic player, and he's got a lot of learning to do. And the goal that he conceded when Aubameyang cut inside and he allowed him to cut inside onto his right foot, which is a no-no.
He learned from that. Well.
Yeah, he learned from that, because you have to make mistakes as a youngster when you're playing that high-level game to realise. And he would have realised it straight after the game. Why did I allow Aubameyang to cut on his right foot? Surely you send him to the byline. That's experience. That's what we talk about with experience. And they certainly miss Trent.
Yeah. So we said we were disappointed. Is there any reasons to be worried about Liverpool? The issue I have with where this game was played is that then half of Klopp's team, I don't know if it's half because it's really only the Europeans, but go on the international break with the national teams, with England, with, you know, whatever country they represent. Whereas before, you would have the Community Shield, and then you know you would have a week to prepare for whoever you play in the Premier League the following weekend. Yeah. Now you see them going, they can get injured, they can come back positive with the COVID, whatever. And then you're only getting them back a few days really before the Premier League starts. So even for Klopp, who would have got maybe wanted the players all back in, and then, okay, let's bring this up a level or something like that to be ready for the first league game, it won't be able to do that.
I find it really bizarre, and I said that on social media the other day. I find it bizarre why the Nation League are playing games before the Premier League and Ligue 1. I don't get it. I mean, I obviously understand it for financial reasons, but if you're a manager like Jurgen Klopp or anyone else across Europe, if you're building up to that first game of the season and half of your team are away on international duty and you're not sure which players are going to come back injured or out of form or a little knock.
Completely.
How on earth do you prepare? I mean, I know, I guess, and I understand that everyone's in the same boat, but it's not ideal. I mean, surely these games, even with a tight schedule, could have been fitted in a week or two or three after the Premier League and the other league start. I find it really, really bizarre.
Like in with France, for example, they moved the last PSG game to 2 days after France played their second game against Croatia in the Nations League. So Deschamps is like, who did that? Who even thought it was a good idea to put Lens PSG in Ligue 1 2 days after France are playing him? We've never ever seen this before.
Incredible.
And it's just like, and I know it's a congested, it's a special season because of everything that's been happening. But surely you need to use a bit of common sense when you plan all those games and everything, right?
I think so. Even though it might be complicated, it's not impossible to try and find the right solution.
Surely.
Isn't it? It's like, you know, guys are going away playing international football, top-class football, at high intensity, before they've even kicked the ball in the Premier League.
I
find it bizarre.
And especially when your clubs, and which is always the debate and the battle between your national team and your club, because your club pay your wages, and yet you're going to start your season with your countries who don't pay you anything.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you can have bonuses or whatever, but this is not the same. It's mental.
I find it a crazy one. I don't know how you sort of prepare for it as a manager. Do you just keep your fingers crossed? What honestly can you do?
And I guess maybe some, I mean, that's what Deschamps was hinting a bit with France, was like some clubs would say, oh, if he can play one of the two games, or maybe he can play the whole one first game, and then could you take him off after half time, maybe, or now the second game? But even for the national team head coach, then it's a nightmare. Okay, so he wants that, and what should I do with him? And what about him? And it's just like,
I can remember playing for Liverpool when I was young, and the manager at the time actually said to me, we've got a really important game next week. I don't think it's a good idea, just between me and him, that you go and represent Scotland for a friendly. And I was like, totally understanding of the situation, because if you've got a massive game for Liverpool, a huge game in the Premier League, that matters so much. Does one cap for your country in a friendly game matter the same? So I pulled out the squad.
Yeah.
So it's...
Yeah,
because if it was a proper game, I know people class the Nations League as a proper game, but not really, in my opinion. You'd go then and represent your country, but I find it really bizarre that they're willing to put themselves through this a week before the season starts.
Yeah, well, let's move on now. We've got a little treat for you, because we're going to welcome one of your former teammates, and I'm sure there's plenty of stories between you and Jan.
Ah, amazing.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules.
Don, as promised, your former teammate at Sheffield United, Jan Agafjotov, is with us. Jan, thank you for being with us first. I know you were at the Community Shield on Saturday. Quickly, what did you make of the game? We've just discussed it with Don. What did you make of it?
Well, I think that you can see what Arteta tried to do at Arsenal. I think that, like always with Community Shield, the team fans who win it, it's a title. And for the rest of the world, there's nothing. And then next year, they change all around. So I think they should not be underestimated, at least by these young coaches that we with a Lampard, Arteta, Solskjaer, and so on, that the winning title, that is a title for Arteta, because I give a bit positivity to his project and maybe a signal also to the owners that they should put even more money in there, because I think the Arsenal team we're seeing now is fifth or sixth in the Premiership, but I think that they will have bigger ambitions in the league than that.
You mentioned in the young manager that you were talking about, Frank Lampard, and he could have very soon another new signing in Kai Havertz. I mean, we need our weekly updates from you on the Kai Havertz situation. Surely we're getting closer now. I mean, they're about to sign a replacement in Patrick Schick, which sort of always was linked to the move from Havertz to Chelsea. What can you tell us?
It's always good to say on Twitter it's getting closer, because then people will say, yeah, it is getting closer. But I mean, if to be concrete, today Kai Havertz will meet up with the German national team. And a lot of people think that it can't be public this week because of that. I don't see it that way. I think that what we see now in Leverkusen, things are moving. First of all, Kevin Folan is going to Monaco. Yeah. And Schick, who was on loan at RB Leipzig, he is owned by Rome. He's supposed to then come to Leverkusen. So I think there's a lot of things that need to, these small details, before they can go out and say Kai Havertz will be our player. And also, mind you, that there is a little situation. I spoke to a good man in Germany, let's put it this way, and said, just be aware also at Leverkusen, that is a the head of sport is the old legend Rudi Völler. Yeah. And he wants to do this kind of himself. And there is a young sport director called Simon Rolfes, who also was the player at the club. And him and the coach want everything to be sorted before Rudi Völler can say, listen, I got my 80 plus bonuses from Chelsea Football Club. But it's getting closer, but I think it's just a matter of days before this will go all public. Yesterday, I called another head of sport in German Bundesliga. Just tell me that this will go over the line. And he said, yeah, I can't tell you when, but everybody expects the Kai Havertz deal to go through maybe this week.
Don, what do you... I mean, you've seen him a lot. You've commented on his game a lot. I know you're a big fan. Does it make Chelsea a title contender if they sign Kai Havertz?
I love him as a player, Jules. I think Chelsea fans need to be a little bit patient. I don't think he's going to walk straight into this Chelsea team and produce the kind of numbers, goals, the performances that he's been producing in Germany for Leverkusen over the years. He's a sensational talent. The game comes very easy to him. When you watch him, he's very elegant. He's almost, I think, Mesut Ozil in his prime, but taller. He's a lot more hungry as well. He's got an appetite to work off the ball. But when you get him on the ball, and if you build a side around him, which obviously Frank's going to do with the signings that he's made, he looks tailor-made for Chelsea. It's a funny one, because it's a little bit of a contradiction from my end, because it's almost like, at the same time, Chelsea don't really need him.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
in my opinion, goalkeeper is more important, maybe a centre-half alongside maybe Thiago Silva, maybe is more pressing matters. But the timing, when a player like Kai Havertz comes up for sale, you have to then, if you're Chelsea, you have to be in contention to sign him, because he's too good, and it runs the risk then of anyone else coming in to sign him.
Jan, there's also another player in the Bundesliga right now, in Thiago Alcantara, who will leave Bayern Munich. We all know that. We're just not sure exactly where he will go. Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp are big fans, and we've known that, but that's moving slowly, let's say. There was rumours about Manchester United as well being interested. What's the latest on Thiago?
Well, Thiago surprisingly wanted to leave Bayern, because Bayern thought they had him. There was a 3-year deal. He wanted 4, then Bayern said 4, and then he said, I'll talk to my wife. We talked about this before. talking to your wife always means that you want to leave. And he wants to play in the Premier League. And I think it's important to say he wants to play in the Premier League, because he's never said, that I know, that he said, I wanted to play for this or that club. And the rumour of what people are saying, and we saw that with Timo Werner, that Liverpool got to sell before they can buy. And I think that's one of the reasons why this is slowing a bit down. And the thing that Manchester United are very keen on Thiago, the thing that Manchester United want Thiago, that is 100% true. And they are in the market for Thiago. And if you saw this week, and there was a big interview with the CEO, Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, of Bayern in Welt am Sonntag. And he said, I expect a bid to be in starting this week. So I think that could be some movement this week. And I'm not sure, I'm not 100% sure which club will make the first bid. I think this is open. Everybody think that will be Liverpool, because Klopp loved him. Well, Klopp loved Timo Werner as well. And he's playing blue for next season.
Which club do you think would need... I think personally that every big club in Europe should go for Thiago Alcantara.
Yeah.
PSG, in Italy, in England, everywhere, in Spain, everywhere. But if we just talk about United and Liverpool, which one do you think of those two teams maybe need him the most?
I think Liverpool, Jules, and I think for the reason where I was at Wembley watching the Community Shield, and I was watching Liverpool for the first 45 minutes, and I actually said to a colleague of mine, I'm bored watching Liverpool. I'm bored because the first 45 minutes was slow. It was pedestrian. They were going side to side. And then once Naby Keita came on the pitch in the second half, they were totally transformed. And they needed someone like Thiago to get on the ball because of his range of passing. Everyone in that Liverpool midfield were going sideways. They were taking a safe option. Well, we all know when you watch Thiago, you know, he's got that range of pass where he can keep it simple. He can spray 40-yard balls left and right. He can play balls quickly in between the lines. So I think for Liverpool fans, they need something. And even the players inside that dressing room, they just need a lift. So I think Thiago going to Liverpool will be a great fit.
Jan, just before we let you go, quickly, you and Don, as mentioned, were teammates at Sheffield United. What was Don like in the dressing room?
Don was exactly like an English, Scottish, British, UK, whatever you can call him, was supposed to be. Don was one of those. He was a glue in the dressing room, totally mad, of course, but I love to play in England. And we had a fantastic time at Sheffield United with a great team, great set of characters, and a manager that we can... I think we need to have a Howard Kendall special podcast one day.
Yeah, we could do it.
I would love to do that, because just you have a manager that for away games... Where come take down to his underwear in the bus, walking backwards in the bus to the boys playing cards and saying, "I'm in." I mean, having manager doing that is fantastic.
Okay, so now I ask you the question: how was Jan in that dressing room at Sheffield?
Jan was amazing because he used to come into yours every day with a smile on his face. Dress sense weren't the greatest, if I must say, back then, Jan. But honestly, his humour, as you know. Fantastic. Yeah. And when you amalgamate all those personalities into a dressing room, and the culture of the dressing room was amazing as well, because there's so many funny characters, you had to have a loud voice to sort of stand out. At Sheffield United back then, you couldn't just have a quiet personality. And you can't imagine Jan coming in on a Monday morning quiet, can you?
Yeah, no,
let's have it right.
So Howard Kendall was the manager.
He was.
Which, as you've been describing already a little bit, it was quite a character, right?
Yeah. Jan, I'm going to ask you a question about Howard. When we beat Ipswich in the semi-finals, I mean, I'll just go quickly, very quickly off-piste, but you saved my life that evening. Do you remember a player, Jules, Mauricio Tirico, left-back?
Yeah.
So after the game, we beat Ipswich at Portman Road.
So that's in the playoff.
Semi-final. So we're going to Wembley for the final.
To go up to the...
To the Premier League.
To the first division, yeah.
I go to shake Tirico's hand, and he spits in my face.
No way!
Yeah, so I pulled my right hand back to give him an absolute wallop. And Jan was standing right behind me, and he grabbed me and stopped me from punching him in the face. Otherwise, I would have got sent off and missed the final.
Yeah.
And we went. And then Jan, while Crystal Palace went to a 5-day training camp, we went to a 5-day drinking camp. Where were we again? And remind us.
Yeah, I will remind you that, and it's first of all, I saved your life. At least I saved you the final, because you would have never played the final. But we played 1-1 in the first game, and Ipswich were a better team in the first game. And we thought, going to Portman Road, this is going to be hard. So I said to my wife, just make yourself ready with the kid. We're going home to Norway next day, because it's going to be holiday, because they will knock us out. But we did a great game. And Howard Kendall was in good spirit, need to be said, before the game. During the first half, he just disappeared. He went into the dressing room for some reason. And then after the game, we won it. And then he came in and said, "Well done, boys. I tell you what, we are all going to go to Isle of Man." I turned around to a guy. I said, "Is it a training camp in Isle of Man?" No. "This is Party Island, between Ireland and UK and the British Isles." And I said, What do you mean? And then the kit manager, who was doing all this stuff after the game at Portman Road, he went over to the gaffer and said, "Should I bring any balls?" And then he just looked at him and said, "Can we say that on a podcast?"
What was worse? Rebuilding your marriage or your liver after those 5 days?
Let's put it this way. I went over. I had a Norwegian teammate, Roger Nilsson. And other training camps, you go for training and you try to sneak yourself out to the hotel to have a drink. We were sneaking us out to train. So I was afraid that my British teammates and my British manager should not see me train. Surprisingly, in the final, it was only a matter of £120 million. So this was not a big game. 80,000 in the stands. And surprisingly, we lost 1-0 in the last minute.
God.
Sad. No, a bit sad, funny now after 23 years, but still a bit funny. Would we have won? I don't know, but we didn't do... we were building up Howard Kendall's character, that's for sure. On the way bus from Wembley, John, we were singing as well. So it was a funny day.
It was. Well, you were, because I was in hospital because I broke my left hand and dislocated my right shoulder.
What, during the game?
True. During the game.
No way.
So someone had a shot and it was going to hit me in the face, and I put my right hand up, broke my hand, went off the pitch, got my hand strapped back up, come back on the pitch, went to win a header, was falling on my broken hand. I then thought, well, I'm not going to fall on that.
No way.
Dislocated left shoulder, stretch it off.
What, in which minute?
Oh, which minute, Jan? I'm guessing about an hour.
Yeah, I just remember now. I just remember with our white shirts we had on that day. I didn't like it either because I wanted to play with the Sheffield United shirt. But I remember that now, that you were off. So maybe that's why we lost at the end.
Yeah, had you stayed on the pitch, you don't know how...
Exactly. I like this podcast. This podcast is good.
You can come back anytime. You can come. How was it to play with each other? So we talked on the characters and you two personalities. I mean, of course you wouldn't get on. But on the pitch, because you were both playing up front, well, you know, going forward together.
Yeah.
How was it? Because Jan was a special profile as a striker, right?
So what you're trying to say is he was quite chubby and he couldn't run in behind. That's what you're trying to say, Jules.
I was going to say he didn't have the pace of Usain Bolt. That's
yeah, if you can think in the modern day game of someone like Olivier Giroud, that would be Jan, where technically excellent, as a midfield player, because I played as an eight, box to box, a dream for me, because what you don't want in a striker is someone that's unreliable, i.e. balls going into his feet, into his chest and not getting hold of it, because you can't make your runs in behind. So whenever the ball went into Jan, you knew he was going to get hold of it because technically he was excellent. And his first touch and his awareness of the players around him. So he always brought you into the game. So whenever balls from left back, from Roger Nielsen or right back in Mitch Ward were ever going into Jan, I could then easily make my runs off him because you knew it would then stick. So as a character off the pitch, sensational, but very easy to play with on the pitch.
Jan, playing with Don?
Yeah, well... I have to answer that because very nice words from Don, but I always love to play with midfielders like Don, because first of all, they had their ability on their runs. I mean, sometimes a player like Don with all his skills, but sometimes you underestimate his ability to come into the right positions. And I think for a striker, is that not only good when you get the ball to keep the ball, but then you have options to do. Either you can play the midfielder, or you can try to go on your own. And that options makes it better for both. And we had a partnership there. I think that was after you went on. I think you went to Everton and I played with Brian Deane up front.
Yeah.
And the mentality of the Howard Kendall's teams, they were all going forward. And that's why it was very fun. And I think my scoring ratio was the best I ever had at Sheffield United, thanks to players like Don and a great... White House and Mitch Ward. There was a lot of people going forward, and it was fun to play football. It was a brilliant time of our football life. I think we all can agree on that. If I was chubby, remember Simon Tracy? We had a goalkeeper. He was like 400 pounds, and I went to.
He's not even here to defend himself. The poor guy. I don't know who he is.
Goalkeeper.
I have to defend myself. And I went to Barnsley. I just have to tell you this story. We went to Barnsley, and I came back to play against Sheffield United. I still lived in the area. There was my teammates. So we're standing in the tunnel and Simon Tracy, who is a very good guy, but very big guy, he said to me, Jan, I know all about your chips, chipping over the goalkeeper. I said, you fatty, you only chips you know about is the one you're eating every day. And after 15 minutes, well, I came through one against Simon Tracy, chipped him, 1-0 Barnes.
Brilliant.
You mentioned Don's...
It was a good time.
Sorry, go on.
A good time, and I was fortunate to play both in Germany and England, and there are always different things that you take from the countries. But that team, that atmosphere in the dressing rooms in English club is second to none. It's a fantastic time to come in and be bullied from the first minute you go in for everything from your shirt till your shoes, from fashion gurus like Don Hutchinson.
You mentioned his skills. What are we talking for the people? I mean, I haven't seen him play because he's far much older than me, for example, and for our listeners.
Far much older.
What kind of skills are we talking, like sort of British Zinedine Zidane skills or very industrial, like British skills?
You're talking about Don?
Yeah, because you mentioned his skills earlier. You said, oh, with Don's and his skills.
I can't believe you put me in the same bracket as Zidane.
I don't know. I'm just asking. What kind of skills
are we talking? Educate him.
No. Dan was a footballer, and sometimes we use that term too often on players. Don was a footballer. There was a lot of things you could say about skills from Don on and off the pitch, but on the pitch, he had a fantastic brain for football. And I think that when you see footballers, he played for great clubs, for Liverpool, Everton. He's played a lot of different clubs. So we can take him down for a joke, but that was a reason. And the reason was that he was a footballer. He knew the game. He could analyze the game brilliantly, and which is the most important thing you can have for a midfielder. And if you have the technique to follow that skill, then you are a good midfielder.
Oh, that's a lovely answer to finish.
Brilliant.
That's brilliant.
Jan, I'm coming on the show again.
Yeah, you're coming again. Thank you so much, Jan. And I'm so glad we got you together on the Premier United. It's brilliant.
Oh, yeah. We'll have to find a bed after this conversation.
Thanks, Jan.
Cheers, Jan.
Oh, so lovely to have you. I love the stories. And you know what? I said, I never see you play because
you're too young.
No, I know. But when we watch Premier League years, you know, and things like that, and we see you sometimes on it, and my kids say, like, is that the man you do the TV show with? And I was like, yeah, that's him. Look,
is he getting sent off again?
Oh, that's great.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Right, Don. It's time for quick hits.
Let's go. Like, what's happening at Barca, Jules? They're back for pre-season, but what's actually happening there?
If you wonder if Messi will be there today on Monday when we tape this podcast for the first day of pre-season, the answer is no. He's not going to be there. He wasn't there on Sunday to do all the tests and, you know, pre-test for COVID. He, as you know, decided that he wanted to leave. But I think there were still a few people thinking, like, okay, but he doesn't want to go to the clash, doesn't want to go for a fight. He will turn up for pre-season, he will turn up for training, etc. Well, he isn't. His dad is coming over from Argentina for proper crunch talks with Barcelona, because at the heart of it is always the same problem. He thinks that he can go on a free,
yeah,
or for a very, very small fee. Barcelona and La Liga, since, yeah, yesterday, put out that very, very official statement saying, uh-uh.
So is that official?
From La Liga's point of view, said, we've looked at the contract and we've looked at all the clauses and all the things, and he's under contract with Barcelona. There's a release clause, it's 700 million euros, otherwise he cannot leave. And obviously at that price, not even City can go, for 200 million they can.
Did you see the picture of the young fan, the young Barca fan with a Messi shirt on waiting for him to arrive? Very sad.
It's very sad. I mean, you could see his point of view, saying like he's had enough of that, he wants to go. But you could imagine, for so many people, he was Barcelona, right?
Well, he should still go to training and do his COVID tests and still be, you know, if you are going to leave the club, leave it on good terms.
I agree.
Feels very messy, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is completely. Well, Manchester United are on the verge of signing Donny van de Beek from Ajax. I'm not really sure where he's going to play, and maybe you can help me, but is it a good move for them and for him?
Great signing for Man United. Again, where's he going to play? Because he's an offensive player, plays in an 8 or a 10. And if people in England haven't seen him play, he's very much like a Frank Lampard. So he'll let other players get on the ball a little bit deeper, like Bruno Fernandes or Paul Pogba. The holding midfield player is going to be important, whether that's Matic and they play a diamond. But when he gets to the top end of the pitch, he has got so much energy. He likes a trick. He's not the most flamboyant. Yeah. Does things quite routinely in a good way. This is a skill, because he's got an eye for a goal, an eye for an assist. But every time I watch him, And every time I've commentated on him, whether it's been the Eredivisie or in Europe, I've always watched him and thought, this guy gets 2, 3, 4 chances every single game. Yeah. So he's a midfield player. Yeah. You know, I think he'll be a success. He might have to work on a little bit of strength, a little bit of bulking. Mm-hmm. But for Man United, when I'm pretty sure teams like Barcelona and other huge teams across Europe all wanted him, I think it looks like a sensational signing.
And I guess certain games where you know you will have 70% of the ball, you can maybe play him and Pogba in front of the back four, for example, with Bruno Fernandes a bit higher up. Yeah. In other games, you need a proper defensive midfielder there. But they might find a way.
Yeah, no, good. Right, so Liga started. How's it gone so far?
We've had another very good weekend, Don. We had Memphis Depay scoring a hat-trick. We had Eduardo Camavinga, the 17-year-old prodigy at Rennes, scoring a wonderful goal. I mean, he's only 17.
Yeah.
And he's just so good.
Is he one of those where you go, at this age, he is going to be a superstar?
Oh, but even 2 years ago, he started playing a bit 2 years ago, especially last year, but you knew it. When you saw him with youth teams, you knew it. With the first team, you knew it. At training, you know it. It's just...
Yeah. You get them every now and again. I was at, going off-piste, I was at Bayern when I was doing my rehab from my ACL.
Yeah.
And I was working with the doctor, Muller Wolfhart, at the time, and there was an 11v11 practice game going on. And he said to me, he said, keep an eye on this player, this young kid who's 17. He said, he's playing on the right wing today, but he'll eventually be a central midfield player and he'll be the best player in German history. And I was like, that's a statement. And it was Bastian Schweinsteiger.
Really?
So you can see at an early age, definitely. Can't you? Every now and again, you get one.
We've got Angers, who brought on a 16-year-old called Mohamed Ali Cho, who is half French, half English, who played at Everton for five years. He played for England under 16, who's a forward, who looks fantastic as well, I think. So there was really good things. Nice won again, 2 wins in 2 now for Vieira. We had Monaco with their first win under Niko Kovac. So lots of good things happening, and PSG haven't played yet because of the Champions League final. They had 2 games.
So they're in a relegation scrap.
Yeah, they are. And Marseille, by the way, first game and won, although it wasn't perfect, but they had Thauvin coming back as well, and it was really good for them. Let's go to Italy, and Sandro Tonali, the heir to the great Andrea Pirlo, is leaving Brescia, his club, to go to AC Milan. For a long time, I think we thought he was going to go to Inter Milan, but that's a great coup, great signing for AC Milan, right?
Yeah, I can't help but feel it might just be a stepping stone for him. Because again, you know, this kid's got loads of talent, only young, but plays the game and it comes to him very easy. And he drives from midfield. So it's a cracking signing from Milan's point of view. Hopefully the giants of Milan are now back and they can try and contend. Because they've been in the doldrums for far too many or far too long, the size of that football club, where you think Antonio Conte's now staying at Inter, they're going to kick on and have a title challenge next season. And Pirlo, interesting story, obviously, at Juve. I think the kid looks a sensational talent. The game comes easy to him. And he'll get goals. Do you like him?
Yeah, I like him. And I think I like what they're doing at Milan, you know. And that might mean that Bennacer is going to go. And he had a great season. And I think there's a few big clubs on him. But good on them.
Yeah. So what's happening with Lyon with their Champions League? Fifth in a row.
Yeah, for the women team, incredible. Probably the greatest ever women's team for sure, but we knew that before. But equaling what Real Madrid did with the great Di Stefano, winning 5 European Cups in a row with the men, they did the same with the women. They beat Wolfsburg 3-1. They were really good again. I mean, there's times where you think the other teams are going to bridge the gap, whether that's Wolfsburg, whether that's Bayern Munich, whether that's PSG, and yet they're always there. They're just a machine, and it was good, and they deserve a lot of credit, I think. Don, the All or Nothing Amazon documentary on Spurs.
Yeah.
Some episodes are published today on Monday when we record this. I don't know if you're going to watch it. I think a lot of people are going to watch it. They follow the team from last season. So the Pochettino star, then the sacking, then Mourinho. Are you excited by those kind of things?
Sort of. I am and I'm not, Jules, because when you've been in dressing rooms, I don't want to watch those sort of videos and find out that I'm watching characters, i.e. players inside the dressing rooms with the cameras in front of their faces being a little bit fake.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you might feel as though if you're a player or a manager, you might say things that you wouldn't necessarily say if the cameras weren't there. But I think it's definitely worth the watch when you think of the characters like Pochettino, especially Jose being involved. And some of the comments that I've seen, you know, calling out people like Dele Alli for being a party boy. They are strong comments, accurate in my opinion. But I think it's going to give the fans an insight to the characters of the managers and which managers are being particularly strong on the players, but how then they react. Because it is a brutal environment.
Yeah,
it's not all rosy in dressing rooms. You can't always say the nice things. And it's not all just, you know, rosy where you're saying someone just to give someone a confidence lift or a boost, you've got to tell the brutal truths.
Yeah, yeah, you're
right.
And
call out someone if they're not performing and they're not training.
Yeah,
so I think I'll probably dip into it, and it probably might get me addicted. I think it's one of them. I'll watch one and then think, right, I'm hooked now.
Yeah, then you stay all night. You stay up
all night. Watch like five on the spin or something. It's going to be amazing. Right, help me out on the pronunciation of this boy. Hassem Awa.
Hussein Awa. Not bad. Yeah, not bad.
Because I like him as a player.
Oh, he's good, isn't he?
Yeah.
10 great days, Champions League, then first call-up with France, and then testing positive for COVID. So he could not play with Lyon on Friday night, could not go with the national team either. First ever call-up. Can you imagine? It's good. He will be back. There's no doubt because he's
sensational,
so good. Incredible.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Weston McKennie is officially a Juventus player. I think with all the bonuses, it's a loan, but then they buy him, and it could go up to 30 million euros. Mm. Are you happy with that? Have you seen him a lot playing at Schalke?
I think he's a good player. I think for Juventus fans, especially with the manager that he's playing under, Pirlo, he's not like him. He's not going to spray the ball everywhere and not really elegant on the ball. What he brings, Jules, is loads of energy.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Juve need. I think especially in that midfield, losing, as we were talking about before, losing Blaise Matuidi,
who's
been sensational at going box to box and closing people down and then making offensive runs. He certainly does that. And when you watch Weston McKennie, you know, he makes runs from wide areas, from central areas. He gets beyond his strikers. He gets his assists. But for a young player, he's got an eye for a goal. So under Pirlo, with the right players alongside him, hopefully he can perform well.
Yeah, you're right. It's the way I think you balance your midfield, really. And Pirlo wanted someone who would chase the ball and recover it quite high on the pitch, etc. And I think for that, he ticks all the boxes. It's just, the other thing as well is that they don't have much money to spend. Maybe they wanted Milinkovic-Savic, for example, or go and get someone for 80 million, but you can't do that. So you need to do a loan with a fee to buy at the end. You know,
and maybe just go, and defensively is not the right word, but hard working, because you've got the talent at the top end of the pitch. So it's like Liverpool, for example, you know, in midfield, work extremely hard and supply that front line. So maybe that's what Pirlo's philosophy is going to be, whether he goes three at the back.
You're right.
And B's defensively a little bit more solid, but having the legs in around midfield is so important.
Yeah, you're right.
So Sydney FC, Jules, won the Australian League.
Indeed, Don. For the second year running, fifth in their history, more than any other clubs in Australia. Well done to them. They beat Melbourne City in the final, who belong to the City Group, and Eric Montbas, their French manager. A great goal as well. It's like a diagonal ball, if you want, in the box, and the right back just chased it and scored. It's a bit strange, but good on them. 7,500 people watching.
Oh, that's good.
That's how many they were allowed in the stadium. So it's been, like in every other league, very extraordinary season in Australia. So good, well done, Sydney. And finally, with Marcus Rashford out injured, Harry Maguire out for the reasons that we know, Gareth Southgate called up Ainsley Maitland-Niles to replace Rashford, and Connor Cody to replace Maguire. Yeah. Are you happy with those two?
I think they're good. Solid signing. Solid players to come in. I think it's probably their weakest position, I think, England, where the midfield's extremely strong and the front line is ridiculously exciting. But both have had good seasons. I'm a massive fan of Maitland-Niles. When I seen that Arsenal were thinking about letting him go to Wolves or Newcastle for about £25 million, I thought it was a strange one. Mm. It was Arsenal's best player in the FA Cup final. Yeah, he was certainly man of the match in the Community Shield. So maybe that's him leaning towards Mikel Arteta and saying, look, I don't want to be leaving. The fans love me. I'm performing well. I've got loads of energy. He's got a good appetite for the game. His attitude's fantastic. So I think if you're an Arsenal fan, you'd be gutted if he does move on. But for England, I think they're two very good replacements.
It'd be interesting. I'm not disappointed, but Rashford out, I thought, okay, bring me someone, I don't know, really excited, the Jude Bellingham or someone, you know, even if
Grealish.
You just...
Grealish is the one to me. I find that bizarre.
Really bizarre. Isn't there something maybe other than just...
Well, I've heard that sort of theory, but then, you know, you look at the players that are in the squad. Kyle Walker's now back.
Yeah.
You know, who didn't, you know, off the field in the pandemic, didn't, you know, he let himself down massively. Eric Dier's now back into the squad, who, you know, infamously was, you know, in a stadium or you know, in a stand, having a confrontation with someone 8 or 9 months ago. So it can't be personal. You know, I wouldn't have thought Gareth's the type of manager that would carry anything personal into his selection. And when I watch Grealish, Jules, I watch a kid that's just dynamite. He's got, he's got, you know, persona about him. He's got ridiculous amounts of talent.
I agree.
And I'm not, and I've said this, and I've said it, and I'll say it again, and I'm not comparing the two. He plays the game like a Paul Gascoigne. He's obviously not going to be as good as Paul Gascoigne, for obvious reasons, but he plays the game like him. When he gets the ball at his feet, he can take people on with ease. And you very rarely get that from a central midfield player. So I'm actually stunned he's not in the original squad.
That's what I thought.
Since Rashford's not in it, I mean, I find it really strange.
And do you know what I think? Even if you've got your team in your heart and in your mind and everything, bring him on, see him at training, see him in the life with the group, see him what he does at St. George's Park, how he behaves. And then you would have felt, okay, I gave him a chance and maybe I was disappointed by this, or maybe I was surprised by this and that, pleasantly surprised. And then, but like, leaving him at home, it just makes no sense.
I was chatting to Alan Hutton the other day, who obviously knows him really well from his Villa days. And he's saying everyone questions that Jack Grealish's attitude. And he said he knows for a fact, he said he's the first one in the training ground early in the morning.
Yeah.
And he said sometimes he doesn't leave till 7 at night. I don't know any pros that I've ever played with has left the training ground at 7 at night. Because emotional to Aston Villa.
Yeah.
And he's the captain of the football club. And his performances, in my opinion, warrant him being in the England squad.
Yeah. I think on this one, Gareth Southgate maybe missed a trick. But we'll see. He might call him up for the next one. That's all we have on time for today. Thank you so much for coming.
Enjoyed it. Loved
it. That was lovely. I hope you come back soon. Thank you for listening. And Gab will be back on Thursday for the show. It's my turn to go away on holiday, so you won't see me for another 10 days. But in the meantime, stay safe.
Real quick, what's the easiest choice you can make? Window seat over middle? Taco Tuesday over salad? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjewels, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjewels now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/gabjewels.